If you weren't with us on Wednesday, we started a two-part series on why do good people do bad things? Kind of a twist on why do good things happen or why do bad things happen to good people? But instead, we looked at the question, why do good people do bad things? And it was more or less kind of a question about Romans chapter 7, verse 18 and 19, where Paul poses the question, or the statement actually, for I know that in me, that is in my flesh, nothing good dwells. For to will is present with me, but how to perform what is good, I do not find. For the good that I will to do, I do not do, but the evil I will not to do, that I practice. And we kind of looked at why do we end up in circumstances and situations that we don't belong? And not necessarily things that we don't have control over, but things that we definitely have control over. Why do we put ourselves in places situations that we flat out don't belong in? And even taking it a little bit further, after experiencing Jesus Christ and experiencing his love in our lives and his power in our lives, how do we find ourselves sometimes back in the world again? And as we've looked at that question, we kind of took a look at how it comes down to our choices, the choices that we make. And we learned that we have faulty logic in the flesh. Proverbs 14:12 says, there is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. And we also learned in Jeremiah 17, verse 9, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Despite that, having Jesus Christ in our lives, we know we have the capacity through the Holy Spirit to glorify God. Within us, we have the capacity to allow the Lord to just do awesome things in our lives. We have the capacity for his love and his power and all the characteristics that make him just such a perfect God. We have the capacity to allow him to shine through us. But sometimes we fall so short of that. And again, a lot of that has to do with our choices. And we kind of looked at the science of a choice. What really is a choice? And defined, it means weighing a number of different options based on their merits and then choosing one of those for action. Weighing a number of different options based on its merits and then choosing one of those things for action. So if you're in the market and you're looking for a job, you take a look at all your different options and you weigh out a number of different things. How much does it pay? How much vacation time does it give me? You know, is it something I actually can stand, you know, for 40 hours a week? You look at a number of different merits, and then you choose one of those things for actions. And some of those merits can include, again, how does it affect me? What's the direct impact on my life? What are some of the possible outcomes and the consequences of this decision? And what are the impact to those around me? How is it going to impact the ones that I love if I do go with A instead of B or B instead of C? How is it going to impact those around me? And a lot of times, one of the key players in our decision-making is feelings. Which one feels right? You know, which one emotionally feels right? And the fact is, none of those merits, regardless of who it impacts or how it makes us feel, or logically which seems to be the best, none of them guarantee a good decision. Because the only thing that guarantees a good decision is the will of God in our lives. Despite how we feel, despite our logic, despite the pro and con list that we talked about on Wednesday, none of that means anything when it's compared to the will of God in our lives. Proverbs 3, verses 5 through 6 says, trust in the Lord with all your heart, and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your path. And in that verse, when it says, in all your ways acknowledge him, we learn that that word acknowledge means to know. To know him in all your ways, and to take it a little bit further, it means know by way of seeing, by way of experiencing. So in all our ways, man, the most important thing in our life is knowing God by experiencing him and having him direct our path and having him show us really what the right way is, Because all our logic and all our feelings and all our emotions can be pointing in one direction, and we know that that way does not mean that it's right. Today we're going to take a look at another reason that we sometimes end up making bad choices or end up in weird situations. And I have a little slideshow, and I'm going to give you some pictures, and I need you guys to tell me what they all have in common. So, Splenda, virtual reality, high fructose corn syrup, cover bands, margarine, Dr. Skipper, stunt doubles, electronic muscle stimulation machines. Have any of you guys ever seen one of these things or had the pleasure of messing around with them? Man, scary. And the Sun's bench. And to add on to this, that's all we have, but to add on to this list, we could add on spray-on tans, drugs, pornography, and even talk. Everyday talk. And I heard someone yell it out. What do they all have in common? They're substitutions. All of them are substitutions. Splenda is a substitute for sugar. Corn syrup, also a substitute for sugar. Margarine, substitute for butter. Dr. Skipper, a substitute for the best soda on earth, Dr. Pepper. They are all substitutions, and talk can often be a substitution for action. And a substitution or a substitute is simply replacing one thing for another. And in all of our examples, rarely was the substitute as good as the real thing. When we take missions trips to Mexico, it's always a ritual or a tradition. We always want to get the Cokes in the bottle. For some reason, they always have tasted better for some reason. And I think it's because, I always thought it was because they recycled the bottles and they didn't clean them, so you got that flavor of, you know, the past few people drinking out of it. But the truth is, in Mexico, now you're starting to see a lot of it here, they use pure cane sugar instead of the corn syrup. And I think that really gives it a really nice taste. But my question is, if substitutes are rarely as good as the real thing, why is there such a huge market for them? You can rarely find a soda with, you know, the real cane sugar in it. It always has that high fructose corn syrup. And from what I've read, corn syrup is pretty much poison. It's poison. Not that sugar is any better, but from what I understand, corn syrup is pretty bad for you. And I've also read that if you left margarine in the wilderness, the animals wouldn't even touch it. They would not even touch it. So if substitutes are rarely as good as the real thing, why is there even a market for them? And the fact is, they're easier to obtain. They're easier to make. Like video games, they're easier to experience. So it's hard to get, you know, 5 guys or 10 guys together to play sports. So let's fire it up on the 360 or the PlayStation and just sit on the couch and play it, because it's easier. Usually there's less risk involved, or there's less cost involved. Like our stuntmen, we don't want to, you know, put our beautiful actors at risk, so we use stuntmen. Or, and this is kind of interesting, we've never experienced the real thing, so we don't know what the difference is. We've never experienced the real thing, so we don't even know the quality of experiencing the real thing. So I guess we're willing to sacrifice quality for convenience. And I think we'd all agree that corporate America knows this. As Americans, we are willing to sacrifice quality for convenience. And that's why we have a fast food industry that makes billions of dollars a day. I kind of made that number up, so don't. Maybe a year. That sounds better. We don't want to wait for our food, right? So if you can just drop it into some boiling fat, throw it in a cardboard box and let us be on our way, we'll settle for that. I mean, we're creatures of convenience. But this isn't a study about exercise and eating right. If we compromise quality in our eating habits for convenience, we might get a little pudgy. We might get a little overweight. But if we sacrifice quality for convenience in our walks, in our spiritual lives, it can be fatal. And one reason I think we make poor choices in our lives is because we accept substitutes for God's perfect plan in our walks. We accept substitutes for God's perfect plan in our walks, and I think the devil is standing right there ready to hand out all kinds of substitutes for God's perfect plan. Maybe we find our worth in our jobs instead of finding our worth in God. Or we think that praise from men is an adequate substitute for praise from our Savior. A lot of our bad decisions come from accepting substitutes for God's perfect will in our life. Let's take a look at Exodus chapter 32. Now, when we think about spiritual giants in the Bible, we think about Paul and we think about David and Moses and Joseph. But how many of you have ever done a study on the life of Aaron? I think Aaron is kind of one of the forgotten characters in the Bible. Aaron was a very faithful and obedient man. When God spoke to him, he listened. When God spoke to him, he obeyed. When God spoke to Moses and called him to stand before Pharaoh and command Pharaoh to let his people go, what did Moses say? Man, I can't do this. I have a lisp. I can't speak right. Send Aaron. And when God called Aaron to do it, you know what Aaron said? Okay. We don't see him question God. We don't see him question what God can do through him. And on a regular basis, he risks his life standing before Pharaoh, telling Pharaoh exactly what the Lord's heart is for his people. And God refers to Aaron as a true prophet. And as we go on further, we know that Aaron is the grandson of Levi, who through that generation we get the Levites, and through that generation we see the royal priesthood passed on. So Aaron is really the father of that royal priesthood. He's a very important character in the Bible, and I encourage you to take a look at his life. But again, why did good people make bad decisions? Look at Exodus chapter 32, verses 1 through 10. Now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, "Come, make us gods that shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." And Aaron said to him, "Break off the golden earrings which are in your ears of your wives, your sons and your daughters, and bring them to me." So all the people broke off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand, and he fashioned it with an engraving tool and made a molded calf. Then they said, "This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt." So when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, "Tomorrow is a feast to the Lord." Then they rose early on the next day, offered burnt offerings and brought peace offerings, and the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. And the Lord said to Moses, "Go, get down, for your people whom you brought out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way which I commanded them, and they have made themselves a molded calf and worshipped it and sacrificed to it and said, 'This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt.'" And the Lord said to Moses, "I have seen this people, and indeed it is a stiff-necked people. Now therefore, let me alone, that my wrath may burn hot against them, and I may consume them, and I may make of you a great generation." So how in the world did Aaron, after seeing all the miracles that God performed, give in to the people? How did Aaron find himself in such a corrupt place that the people were willing to turn their backs on God and substitute a real, living, loving God for an engraved image, for a cow? Exodus 32:1. Again, let me read that. "Now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, 'Come, make us gods that shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him.'" I think a lot of the mistakes we make come from our impatience with God. I think a lot of the mistakes we make come from just not being willing to wait on God's best for us. We say that we trust God, but when we start to get stretched and there's a need that has to be met, and we're running out of time, and our flesh wants it, and our flesh needs it, and our flesh starts getting worried because we don't see God working, And the devil has lined up plenty of different options for us that we could just reach out and grab and have that instant gratification. Man, that's a recipe for compromise in our life. That's a recipe for accepting a substitute. And the devil knows where we're weak too. He knows where we want to meet that need in the flesh. He knows where we can fall. And so he lines up plenty of substitutes that instantly we could reach out and have that gratification. And you see this a lot with relationships. You know, we turn 18 and we're like, man, I am waiting for what God has for me. I am waiting for that person that God has for me. And then we turn 23 and we're getting a little impatient, but hey, we're only 23. We can wait. You know, I know God has someone for me. And then we turn 27 and we haven't met that person. So we start doing a little research and start putting our name out and our face on flyers. And then we turn 34 and like it's part of our introduction. Hi, I'm Dan. Are you married? And that's how we're willing to trust him until things start getting a little uncomfortable, until things start getting a little awkward. And man, there's a whole slew of guys or girls that the devil has lined up ready to take your hand and lead you to a life that can just flat out be miserable. David knew a thing or two about waiting. David knew a thing or two about waiting. He was anointed king. He didn't just walk into the kingship. I mean, all kinds of stuff happened before he became king. He was even chased out of the kingdom that God told him he was going to be king over. He was chased out of the kingdom to go hide in caves and have King Saul chase him and try to take his life. David knew a thing or two about waiting. I'm going to read a few Psalms to you. First one is Psalms 27:14. Wait on the Lord. Be of good courage. And he shall strengthen your heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. Let me read that one again. Again, it's Psalms 27, verse 14. And understand in each one of these is an absolute promise from God. Wait on the Lord. Be of good courage, and he will strengthen your heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. Next one is Psalms 37, 9. For evildoers shall be cut off. But those who wait on the Lord shall inherit the earth. And then Psalms 37:34. Wait on the Lord and keep his way, and he shall exalt you to inherit the land. When the wicked are cut off, you shall see it. And then finally, Isaiah chapter 40, verse 31. But those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. If we're willing to wait on the Lord, man, he's got all kinds of promises for us. If we're willing to say, you know what, regardless of how desperate the situation is, like Pastor John says, despite the fact that it's 11:59 and counting, and we don't know what's going to happen or where we're going to go or how we're going to get this or how this need's going to be met, if we're willing to wait on him, he will strengthen us. He will strengthen us. And that's how we can avoid substituting inadequate things for God's best. If we are willing to wait on him, we know we are getting the best. And remember, what was happening? Why were they impatient? Moses was delayed, but if you think about it, why was Moses delayed? Where was he at? He was on Mount Sinai receiving commandments from God. He was receiving the commandments of God for the people so the people could be edified, so they could be strengthened. And if they just would have waited for Moses, they had no idea what was going on behind the scenes, but they didn't need to know. Because they served a God that was faithful and a God that loved them. So despite the fact that they didn't know what was going on behind the scenes, they could have trusted in the Lord and known that Moses was going to come back with something special. And God was revealing himself to Moses. So despite the fact that we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, know that the Lord is working in amazing ways. And how many times have you waited on the Lord and he had just met that need so perfectly, and then he revealed to you the ways that he was working behind the scenes? How many times has that happened? I know many times for me. Wait on the Lord and he will strengthen you. Exodus 32, verses 4 and 5. Here's another problem that Aaron got into. And he received the gold from their hand, and he fashioned with an engraving tool, and he made a molded calf. Then they said, "This is your God, O Israel." Now that's little g. "This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt." These are the words coming from Aaron's mouth. "This is your God, little g, O Israel, this molten calf is your God, and this is the thing that brought you out of Egypt." So when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, and this is interesting, "Tomorrow is a feast to the Lord." And if you look at that word Lord, it's Yahweh. It means God, the living God. So in the same sentence, he says, okay, look at this golden calf that we've made for you. This golden calf is what brought you out of Egypt. Now let's have a feast to Yahweh, to God. Does it make much sense? First off, why a calf? Why did he make a calf? Well, the Egyptians worshipped a god called Apis, A-P-I-S. And it was represented by either an entire ox or the head of a calf on a pole, a golden head of a calf on the pole. So Aaron was reverting to what the people had known when they were in bondage. He was falling back on the things that they knew, the things that they were familiar with, all the false gods and all the false deities. He was falling back on what they knew. But then the weird thing, though, is then he tries to combine it with the worship of the one true God. He tries to combine that, saying, "Hey, tomorrow, you know, I know we need some more spirituality in this. I know that there's more to this, so let's combine idol worship with the worship of the one true God, and hey, you know, compromise. That'll work out." When we know that we know that we know that we know that we want to follow the Lord, but things get too hard or the cost becomes too great, we start looking around for a substitute. But something that still looks and feels spiritual, but it still allows us to kind of partake in the things of our old nature. Something that still looks and feels spiritual, so we get that taste of it because we know how important that is. We've experienced Jesus Christ in our life, so we know that somewhere in there he's got a fit. But it's just too hard. And the things that are going on in our life, it costs too much to just be completely, fully surrendered to him. So I need to bring in a little bit of my flesh. And so we may find a church where everything is lawful through the grace of God. You know, we can be anything we want because we're sinful creatures, and that's just who we are, but we're forgiven through Jesus Christ. So we may find a church that we can just do whatever we want. And you know, it's funny, Pastor, I was listening to a teaching by Pastor Jack Hibbs, and he makes a reference to these mailers that all of the churches receive. And if you ever want to look at one, I'd be more than happy to show you. But there are these advertisements for these companies that will come into your church, and they will work on your ministry and work on your church service so it fits into this nice, neat, cute little package, and it's really easy to digest. It doesn't really address sin or anything like that, but the lights are really cool, you know, and the band is just out of control, and it's just really awesome. But it's easy to swallow, about 20 minutes of teaching, you know, 30 minutes of just excitement and carnival action. And then once you get your spiritual fix, you get to go home and return to your everyday lives. And they guarantee your church will grow. And the reason your church will grow is because there's so many of us that are looking for that, just that spiritual fix, but still allowing us to kind of live in the flesh. And some of us, maybe we even go to a solid church. You know, maybe we go to a church where the Spirit of God is moving in awesome ways. And we think that being in the church service on a Sunday or on a Wednesday is a replacement or a substitute for having a real, genuine relationship with God, for having that personal, intimate time on our face before God. And church can never be a substitute for a real relationship with God. The church body, us as a family, should be an outpouring of what God is already doing in our personal lives. When we come in on a Sunday or a Wednesday, I pray that God has done something amazing in our hearts, and we're ready to pour that out on everyone that we come in contact with on Sundays and Wednesdays. But if not, if we come and we just watch all the spiritual stuff going on, and that's our spiritual fix, I've heard it been called more of a spiritual pornography. because we are watching other people experiencing it, but we are not experiencing it for ourselves. And again, that's how church can become a substitute. And if you only hear one thing today, if maybe you've been sleeping, I ask you to just wake up real quick for just this one moment and understand that nothing can substitute or replace a real, genuine, on-your-face relationship with God. Regardless of how many spiritual books we read or how many pastors' teachings we listen to on the way to work or how often we have Christian music playing in the background, nothing can replace a real relationship with God. Guys, we desperately need that. We desperately need that private time where we just sit at his feet and we allow him to minister to us, and that relationship grows and he matures us. Nothing can replace that. That's the Christian walk. That's what it should be. But guys, our flesh hungers for substitutes in our spiritual life. Our flesh hungers for things to replace the hard stuff. We look for things that are easy, things that don't cost much, things that are safe. But again, the bottom line is there is no substitute for what God has for us. And guys, those substitutes that I'm talking about, another word for them is sin. That's all it is. Substitutes in our life, if we accept things aside from God's will, sin is missing the mark. So when we miss what God's best is for us in our lives, when we start accepting substitutes in our life, we are accepting sin in our life. Because sin, again, is missing the mark. It's missing what God's best is. So we have to set it in our hearts and in our minds that we will not accept anything less but God's best for our life. We will not accept anything less because he promises us an abundant life. And no matter how tough things get or how impatient our flesh gets, we have to continue to walk in his spirit and know that nothing else can meet the needs like God can. Nothing else can meet the needs in our life than God can. And before Pastor Rod comes up and leads us in communion, I kind of want to talk to you guys that you don't know anything better. You haven't accepted Jesus Christ into your life. All of this may seem absolutely foreign to you. Because some of us are settling for substitutes, and we've experienced the real thing, and that's what's so sad about it. We've experienced the real thing. We've experienced what Jesus Christ has for us and just the amazing power that we have when we walk in his spirit, and we find ourselves settling for things of the flesh. But some of you may not know any better. Your whole life, you've been raised in a home where there's a cheap substitute for love. Or there's a cheap substitute for what purity is. Or there's a cheap substitute for what a man should be or for what a woman should be. But you've seen possibly glimpses of something better. You don't know fully what it is, but you know that there's something better out there. You haven't fully experienced it, but you know that there's something better out there. And the Lord is speaking to your heart saying, man, I want to change your life. I want to change your life. This is not the way what I had planned for you. This is not what I had planned for you. And I want to encourage you, if that's the Lord speaking to your heart and you're just sick of not living the way that you just feel like you're missing out and you're sick of it. And if you're ready to experience the real thing, then this morning I just want to give you an opportunity to give your life to Christ. Because I promise you're going to spend your whole life trying to substitute that hole that you have in your life with all kinds of different things. And the only thing that you're going to experience is emptiness. You'll probably get some instant gratification out of it. But in the end, man, it's worthless because that's not the way we were created. That's not the way we were created.